Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode to it once a week, once every 2 weeks, just kind of depending upon the kickboxing action. And also, you are listening to the show in the most efficient way, which is through the iTunes search engine. Just enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and the show pops right up. Going to go ahead and jump right into it. Glory Chicago went down, Glory 44, and we, you know, had, I don't really think that there were too many upsets on the card, but we really had some good action, some passable fights, some good performances. All in all, I enjoyed the show. I was there live. I was in Chicago for it. It was pretty cool to watch some things, other things not so much. We'll go ahead and start rocking through this card. I'll start on the bottom. Victor Pinto gets a victory over Adrian Maxim by split decision. 29-28, 27-30, and then 29-28. My personal opinion was this was the most entertaining fight. It was the best job of style of clash where both guys had a lot of offensive success. So you got Victor Pinto, of course, who he and his brother Antoine, they come, you know, they are from Thailand, and they've got that, you know, that old school Thai style. You're going to see more body kicks. You're going to see, you know, sporadic boxing. You're going to see a lot of movement. You're going to see them, you know, score move. Really play very, you know, not as many low kicks. They'll score clinch knees here and there, but they understand how the kickboxing game is done here, so they modify themselves to kind of play open. I would really call it Thai fight style Muay Thai is their stance, because Thai fight, really, you didn't see a lot of guys just get absolutely blown away in the clinch in Thai fight. Even in the dominant blowout fights, most of the time those guys would be limited in the clinch. Really, they were looking to score some sort of big crazy KO, whether it be with an elbow or a jumping kick or something. So Victor Pinto kind of plays with that style a little bit, and Adrian Maxim, of course, you knew what he was going to do. He's going to move forward. He's going to throw that heat, look for low kicks here and there. Not really a combination to low kick flow type fighter, but he'll throw some power kicks in space, and when he gets in, he's going to let the hands go to the body and to the head. Thought that both had good moments. I thought that the fight was entertaining throughout. I thought Adrian did a good job of closing the distance. Just technically, it was just what you look for when you match the best fights in the world and the best fighters in the world. And you doesn't necessarily mean that you're just looking at the best of a particular style. Maybe a style, or, you know, in this case, a guy who's comes from a, you know, a particular part of the world where they fight a certain style, maybe that can make a great fight simply because it clashes and runs into a different style than it completely. Normally, he's able to, with his scoring and his movement, Pinto is able to get away. This time, Maxim was good enough athlete to close his distance. So he created a fight where there might not have been a fight in some situations. I thought it was a good performance by both guys. Definitely want to see Adrian Maxim again. Good job by Victor Pinto. Very, very good skill set showed. I did have the fight for him close, just kind of going, you know, off of how I would have scored it. Really entertaining stuff. Next fight is Nate Richardson versus Rafael Dudek. It's crazy because I thought that Richardson showed a lot of explosiveness. He's a pretty good, you know, fast twitch athlete. He does a lot of good things. Lets the hands go, finds his low kick offense here and there. But really, it's just the boxing flurries. He put them together really, really well. Really good stuff. Round one was him, clearly. But it looked like the fast twitch and the muscle build slowed him down a little bit. And Rafael Dudek came on at the end of the round. And then where I'm sitting, I was really close to where Mike was. And Mike, of course, talking to Dudek in English. And he says, hey, you know, keep going with the low kick. Keep going with the body shots, that kind of deal, whatever. He says, you'll get him tired. Next thing you know, Richardson starts to slow. Dudek really builds on the kicks, really builds on the body work. Keeps playing the game. And it looked like in round two, Richardson wouldn't come back for a third. Third round, got ugly. Richardson would throw a couple of shots here and there and then fall into the clinch. There's a lot of dirty box play in a clinch. This tactic did limit Dudek from getting some of those low kick scores in space, and the body work was kind of stifled. When you're playing chest to chest, or when you're in hold positions, those kind of rabbit punch don't show up on the cards as much as you would think, but really they do a good job of at least keeping, you know, in a neutral spot and it keeps you from taking something super significant. I can think of very few times where people have been in that kind of clinched up position landing body shots where the other guy went down. Most of the times when I see people in those spots, it's just the stalemate in scoring. And I think Richardson would throw a couple, fall into those positions, He wasn't at bay in a position where Dude could land a body shot or something, because you know, one of them I thought got Richardson pretty good in the second. But I thought that it was close fight. I had no problems with the decision for Richardson. I did think that there was a chance that Dudek might have gotten one scorecard, but as I recall, you know, watching it, I really truly believe that rounds 1 and 3 were for Richardson clear, and I thought that round 1 was for Richardson clear. Number 2 was for Dudek clear, so I do disagree with the judge who gave Richardson 2, but I thought that round 3, Richardson did a good job of not just, you know, getting offense and spots here and there, but he also did a really good job of wearing on Dudek, like keeping him from getting his offense back. Next fight was Robert Thomas's comeback victory over Warren Thompson, and by far the KO of the night. Warren Thompson's getting good. First thing that needs to be established, the guy who first showed up at Glory, got opportunities, kept fighting, okay MMA career, you know, had some KO losses, you know, to Collette, got one over him, and he had another one at the light heavyweight. Since coming down in weight was the first step. Last time he fought, he showed that he had the punch and the toughness for the weight class. He could take offense for the most part in that last outing. So he felt confident. He kept hitting up Glory over and over. Get me out there. He gave him this opportunity with Robert Thomas. And he been working real hard with his coach. And also gone out to Holland a couple times to work with Andre Menard. So it was cool to see Andre Menard, you know, walking around doing his thing. And kickboxing looked really, really good for 2 rounds. It looked good. He was finding his combo, the low kick flow. He had a good counter kick game. Anytime offense was scored by Thomas, Warren would come back and score some offense of his own, finish with the low kick. He figured out kickboxing. But in round 3, you could see that he was slowing. I don't know if it was from the weight cut or whatever the case was. You could see that he was slowing. And then Thomas did something that I don't usually see Thomas do. He picked it up. Turned on the gas. Normally, I think that he just kind of accepts the fight flow. Here, it looked like he saw something, started to let his hands go a little bit more, started to score more. I thought Thompson was up 2 rounds by this time. And then in the last minute of the round, Thompson lands a big uppercut. Warren is hurt from the uppercut. So it's literally just uppercut and a right hand follow, cleaned it up. And a big KO win for Robert Thomas. He's got the tools. Thomas, for me, just sometimes it's just when do you win the next step up bout? And I think this is the kind of win that puts him in that position again. He's fought in Brazil. He's fought, you know, for Glory several times now. Thomas isn't bad, man. He's got some skills. So it's about putting it together and beating the elite. And I think that that's what happens. That's what these Glory fight opportunities are for, to move you in that direction. Warren Thompson showed the most kickboxing skill that he showed to date. Unfortunately, he had a stoppage loss. So he'll probably, you know, take a little bit of a break. He seems like he was game. He was already asking about his next fight after that. But I really do believe that Warren Thompson did show improvement. He has put the work in, and he is getting better. But I just think that Robert Thomas was able to put together a good 3rd round, but not just put it together and win it. He did what he needed to do. He was able to find a stoppage when he was down in the cards. Good comeback win for Robert Thomas, who also got the bonus for the KO. Dustin Jacoby defeats Sean Joyce. TKO, ref stoppage. It was 2 minutes, 18 seconds into the 1st round. Really, it's just 2 different guys. So basically, I was there at Glory. Really had to fight to make this happen. This fight, Sean Joyce was walking around about 200 pounds. He got the fight 4 weeks ago. So he thought that he would work really, really hard. He said he doesn't really run, you know, a long run to get himself in shape. I think maybe he does sprints or you know, something that ignites the cardiovascular system in a way where maybe through short bursts but not through long runs. So he wasn't used to it. So he goes out there and he starts running and trying to get himself in shape to make sure that he makes weight. He ends up weighing 180, and then Dustin Jacoby ends up weighing 186.5, like the very lowest that Jacoby could weigh. He weighs, and then Jacoby ended up being 6.5 pounds over him. And when he was 6.5 pounds over, the big argument that was coming from one of the commission guys was, he was too big. He said, hey, man, he's already bigger right now. Tomorrow, he's just going to get bigger, and the only guy's only going to get up to, like, 86. He says, I don't think it's safe. Not going to do whatever. Sean Choice put the work in. He came down here. His camp came down. He wanted to fight. Dustin Jacoby, of course, was real upset because he didn't want to, you know, put on, you know, he wanted to go ahead and go through the known process of putting his, you know, eat his food, get his weight back up, get, you know, healthy and strong again, so on. For me, it makes perfect sense that, you know, somebody would have a little bit of difficulty with this. But if you know combat sports, this is a norm. You know, this is not odd. This is not some odd, you know, 6 pounds is just the end of the world for us in kickboxing. I've seen this many times. This really didn't bother me at all. But I can also see that if you're not used to kickboxing, that could be a little bit different. However, I really disagreed with this commission guy when he said, my problem is tomorrow one guy is going to put on more weight than the other guy, and I don't think it's fair and I don't think it's safe. And I said, well, what was the distance that you're looking for? He says, well, in boxing, you know, it's only like 3 pounds or something like that. I was like, first of all, that's not true. There's a big difference in weight class between athletes all over combat sports the next day. Some people go up 15 pounds, some people go up 25 pounds, some people go up 7 pounds. It's different. So for you to say the criteria of, you know, your decision for wanting to stop the fight is based on what you think the weight will be tomorrow, I don't think that that's fair, unless you're going to use that universal across the card. And they didn't. They were only using it on one fight. So I disagreed with it, but they fought and they fought, and this fight happened. When the fight happened, you could clearly see that Dustin Jacoby is a bigger, stronger guy. Choice came out and showed some good athleticism and some really good kicks. Like, I really liked the speed of his offense. But he's probably better suited for 170. He's a tweener. You know, he's probably better suited for 178 pounds, but they really don't have it. So he'll move down to 77 kgs for the next one, and hopefully everything will work out for him as far as getting his skill set and so on. But Jacoby, too big, too strong. Jacoby actually won this fight with a couple of jumping knees, and one of the jumping knees was actually blocked, but it didn't matter because he was so big and strong that he still drove Sean Choice back into the corner, and then Choice went down. So Choice was, when the fight was over, Choice was absolutely 100% fine. He just couldn't handle the strength and size, and Jacoby was able to put him down. Jacoby, of course, what's next for him? A step up bout. He usually does pretty good against the guys in USA. Very, very well suited for the weight class. We'll go ahead and see what comes from that down the road. Sean Choice moving down to 170. We'll see what they do with him next. Michael Turinsky gets a victory. Very debated, unfortunate victory for him, the way the crowd booed. Over Catalan Morisano, split decision, 30-27, 28-29, and 30-27. So both judges that had it for Turinsky had him winning all the rounds. It was interesting because I'm not the opposed to the decision all the way. I didn't think that it was like highway robbery. Even though I disagreed, I didn't think it was like the most heinous thing of all time. My thing with it was body language comes into play. Clean, effective offense comes into play. And I thought that Turinsky had some moments where he was scoring. Switch kick, move, couple shots, move. But the real thing that kind of made this a disappointing fight, outside the fact that Catalan Morisano is a draw and a star, man, there was a lot of people there for him. Like, there's just, those flags came up. When they read the decision, there was a really cool moment where there was a fan that had a flag and Morisano didn't have one. And his corner saw the guy with the flag, and then they came out and they said, hey, can we use your flag? And then they grabbed it and they brought it in. So the flag that he had wasn't something that his corner brought. He got it from a fan. And as you can imagine, that means the world to your fan base. You got to do more stuff like that. It's more than just performing at a high level, you know. And a perfect example, I'll go ahead and sidebar on a story. There's a NBA basketball player named Shaquille O'Neal. And there's another one named Kobe Bryant. Now, those are pretty big names in sports. I say this because if you are not from America, there's a chance that you don't know who these gentlemen are. So that's why I'm saying who they are. I worked at a movie theater, and Kobe Bryant came to the movie theater during the day to watch a movie. He had security escort him in through the back. He hung out until the movie started. His security brought him in. He got to watch the movie, and then they took him out. And that was his experience at my movie theater. Later that day, Shaquille O'Neal came. he's a big video game guy. So he goes over and he's playing some of the people that he came with. He's playing them in Tekken. Tekken was the big video game at the time. So after he's beaten all of them, he turns and he looks at the people who are working at the theater, my fellow coworkers, and he says, are you guys, he was like, man, they're no match for me. He said, this is y'all's video game. I know one of y'all is going to be good enough to give me some competition. And one of our employees came over and played him and then dominated him. And then afterwards, Shaq laughed and said, I should have known better than to challenge the masters of the house. He then goes, watches his movie, comes out of the movie, sees a couple of employees sitting around. He says, hey, do you guys want to go to Perkins, which is a restaurant we have here? When he did this, as you can imagine, it just made him the biggest star in the minds of them, because it's like he shared a piece of them. You know, he shared a piece of who he was with our staff when he came by. So to this day, if you ask any of them about it, they remember when Shaq came. They don't remember when Kobe Bryant came. Not that Kobe Bryant's not a good athlete and famous. I'm just saying that's how you can sit in someone's heart. So moments like this that I noticed that maybe not a lot of people noticed, but when you have a huge fan base, some of them are from, you know, the Romanian public that they have there. Some of them made the trip over to Chicago. And to have one of them give the flag to the fighter while he's in the corner, huge audience, it means a lot to that individual. And that's how stories get started, and that's how legends are built. So when Catalan Morisano's corner went out and did this, I just thought that it was just a huge moment for the sport. It was really, really good stuff. Unfortunately for him, split decision didn't go his way. He was pressuring, throwing his big Catalan Morisano shots off fight. That's how he gets down. Morisano ain't waiting. You know, 10 seconds in, there was a woman sitting next to me, and I was telling her, I was like, hey, you don't have to wait long for this guy. He's going to be throwing that heat. Unfortunately, Terinsky did a great job of neutralizing that, holding at the right time, just getting out of the way, keeping it. If he landed a big shot, he grabbed on. He didn't let three or four big shots get him. It'd only be one. Turned into an ugly fight, but it turned into a victory, and good stuff. I'm excited to see what happens down the road for Kyler Morisano, who's just a star in this game. He's older. He's not in his prime anymore, but he can make money as a prize fighter, and he does a lot of good stuff. Next person I want to talk about is next fighter on the card is, oh, one more thing. I forgot to add this to Terinsky. Terinsky is a guy who is a ambassador for Muay Thai. He has fought on the, you know, high-level amateur circuits before. You got to give this guy credit for coming in and pulling off an upset in hostile territory. It gets overlooked, but he came in there. Despite what you think of his work, he fought the way he fights, and he was able to get his hands raised. So shout out to him. Tiffany Von Seuss defeats Miriam Usla, TKO in the fourth round. First of all, I'm going to spend a couple moments to talk to you guys about how much a fan I am of Miriam Usla. Usla took this fight on Monday. The fighter fell through, something had gone on, and then they were scrambling to find someone. And they got Usla, who came in, took this fight. Not only did she take it, Usla's fought the best of the best, like anybody out there. Kaylee Reese, anybody out there you can name around that weight class and above hers, she's fought them all. She's really come out and put on a great performance. I have one of the highest respects for her as one of the legit, awesome female fighters in this game that have gone out there, put themselves on the line, and fought the best in the world. She really has. She's traveled. She has had a great career of this. She takes this fight on Monday. So I'm worried, you know, I wonder if she had cardio. Some people said that she had a fight coming up, so she was already training a little bit. But it's different. You know, it's different to hop in and take something. All of a sudden, you're doing five rounds. Who knows how her feel was. They go out there. Tiffany Von Seuss got the movement. She scores here and there. Usla looked to, was a little conservative round one, feeling Tiffany Von Seuss out. Round one, after round one, I was thinking, okay, we can't have another one of these kind of performances. Because really, Tiffany Von Seuss won the title last year without anyone really noticing, because the fights were forgettable. People have to have moments in sports. You can't just be about you getting your hand raised. They got to have moments. And I think that Tiffany, round one, showed that she was just too skilled, too slick, too much movement, and Usla would never be able to catch her if she fought at that pace. And this is why we love Usla. Usla didn't keep fighting at that pace. She came out. She decided that I got to exchange more. I got to take more chances. She bit down on the mouthpiece. She threw big right hands. And she was catching Tiffany here and there. But clearly, the better, stronger, athlete and technician over a longer period of time would always be Tiffany Von Seuss. She just has more tools. So Tiffany, of course, started landing some bombs. And Uzla was game. She was right there. She's taking the shots. She's taking the combos. Big low kick scored. Both girls exchanged teeps repeatedly to the body and face. But in the end, every round, it was clear that Tiffany Von Seuss was better, was 3-1 better. So she's putting on a good performance. And then we get into round two. And I was a little confused, but I asked the afterwards, I asked the ref, and I got a clarification. Tiffany Von Seuss lands a teep. Teep looks like it hurt Uzla. She comes in for the finish, but the teep kind of knocked her off balance when she went down. So when she went down, originally I didn't think it should have been called a down. But when I revisited the fight, or when I revisited the you know, the replay, and I talked to the ref in the back, he had helped me out, or he told me what his opinion was basically he called, he did the 10 count, he said, and Uzla got right up after the push. But then he said that after he got the 8 and he said, "Do you want to fight?" He said that Uzla had a really bad eye. He said that Uzla's eye looked like it rolled into the back of her head. And he looked like, in that moment, he felt like he was about to send a concussed fighter back into action. So he called it immediately. So that's one of those times where it's very important that I should, you know, stress to this and to everyone else. That is one of those times where you have to understand that the ref has got the best view of it. TV's not going to catch that. I didn't catch that, and I was sitting right behind the action. I was wondering what was going on. His view, his role, of course, is to protect the athletes. He looked at her, did his count. After he's doing the count, he could clearly see that the girl got up, so she looked like she was game to fight. And then he watches Uzla's eyes go into the, you know, roll up, and he's like, "I'm going to stop the fight here." That's a great job. That's a great stoppage. Even though the eye of the casual fan, the viewer on TV, they might not see that at all. So for them, they might be thinking, okay, bad stoppage, bad stoppage. We should all give, you know, a slight moment to realize that even if we disagree with how it looks to our point of view, there is a really good chance that the person who's in there sees it differently, knows it differently, and they stopped it at the right time. Despite the fact that we can all make arguments for who and shouldn't, who should and who shouldn't, I really truly believe this was a great example of a guy who knew better, had the best view, and made a call. And when I found out more about it, I had to back his call a lot more, because I was definitely wrong. I thought that Uzla was ready to go. And because her effort was so good, her cardio was insane for somebody who took a fight on Monday. Like, just, there was no doubt as I watched her in the corner that she could fight 10 rounds. She was in great shape. So shout out to Uzla. Tiffany Von Seuss, champion still. Every tool, the movement, you know, the big power shots. She felt like she wasn't the champion because she didn't perform in a way, get stoppages, while the crowd, she felt like she needed to defend the title and send that kind of statement for people to know that she is the true glory champion. She did that. She did a great job. Now, moving forward next, of course, you're going to know what I'm going to say. I want the Anissa Mexen fight. I think that is the fight to make in the weight class. Should be a lot of fun. Tiffany Von Seuss gets it done, and that finishes out the fight pass portion of the card. We move into the tournament portion. Hirak Grigoryan went out there and did the Hirak Grigoryan. Kareem Ben Mansour had moments where he was scoring offense. Like, he'll score here and there. Did a good job of attacking the rear back leg for the low kick. Did a lot of good things. But man, Hirak Grigoryan, just all pressure, all throwing, you know, all or nothing. I talked to Nikki Hemmers out there, and we're talking, and he goes, man, he's all or nothing. All or nothing, you know, like, it's just, that's just his game. So he comes out there, he bites down on the mouthpiece, exchanges, finds his big offense, really did a good job. Hirak Grigoryan gets that round, moves on. Antoine Pinto goes out there, fights Zach Bunnell. Zach Bunnell took the fight on short notice. Bunnell had some competitive moments for sure, considering a guy who took the fight 2 weeks ago. Scored the hook, low kick here and there, was able to score offense in spots, you know, single shots, but really, and I think some people leaned for him, I want to say the third round maybe it was, but Antoine Pinto was on autopilot. You know how he fights. He just likes to get the game going, move, 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 look for offense, move, move, look for offense. boxes very little, kicks strong to the body, movement, doesn't put up huge numbers or huge separations on the scorecard, but the guy wins. He goes out there, gets a victory, and then they go to the finals. In the finals, Hrakagorian beats Antoine Pinto, but the thing, the story about it was Hrakagorian made Antoine Pinto fight, and that's why everybody loved Gregorian afterwards. Pinto couldn't play that game with Gregorian. He was strong. Plus, Pinto doesn't attack the low kicks as much. So the work that had been done to the rear back leg that clearly hurt and slowed Bin Mansur, clearly hurt and slowed Gregorian with them during the fight a little bit. He showed no signs of it in the next round, and they weren't built upon because they didn't return to that offense. He stayed with who he is. He stayed with who had got him to the dance. Antoine Pinto scores body kicks, movement, boxing here and there, body kicks, movement. That's how he plays. Goes out there, tries to do that to Hrakagorian. Hrot, every time he threw the body kick, Hrot would counter with a kick to the leg. So he'd eat the body kick, counter to the leg, and then throw a boxing flurry every single time. He kept landing big shots. But if there's one thing that Antoine Pinto did, despite how you feel about his style, his toughness got him a lot of points this past weekend. He really did eat some big shots from Gregorian. People were wondering how he didn't go down. And then in the second round, he started to realize, I'm not going to be able to get away from this guy. And he just started throwing heat right back. Like, just started battling, just started punching back, throwing back. He realized, I ain't got no choice. Scored pretty good exchanges, scored well in some spots, but all in all, for me, is Gregorian clear in all of the rounds. Hrakagorian takes it. One judge gave one round to, if I remember correctly, hold on, let me go ahead and go back to my notes. Two judges gave, Pinto one of the rounds. I'm not sure which round, but Hrakagorian gets a decision. Hey, his victory sets up a third fight with Mirko Grunhardt. Of course, it's got the backstory of that punch that landed in their last fight. We'll see. That was definitely something to revisit. But Hrakagorian wins the Raymond Dekkers Trophy, and he goes on to fight for bigger and better things. Antoine Pinto, still good, solid, serviceable guy. They're going to use him fight cards all over the world. Wouldn't be surprised if they use him in the French card coming up in November. So, good stuff. Richard Abraham defeats Daniel Morales, and I really thought it was one of his better performances. I've always thought that Daniel Morales has got good kickboxing skill, even though he doesn't necessarily have the biggest KO pop. And I thought Richard Abraham had good KO pop, but doesn't necessarily always show the best kickboxing skill. And I thought this fight he came out and showed everything. He came out, really good combinations, really good low kick flow. Anytime Morales scored on him, he scored right back. Kept the pressure on. In the third round, as Morales is slowing, he put together a mean series of offense with his boxing, and he was able to score it down. Just a flow of kickboxing, execution. Scored it down late in the third round. Morales was able to go the distance, but Abraham put on a great show. It was crazy. His wife came down from the stands to watch, and she's like dancing to his walkout music, and she's sitting right next to me, and she screams and yells everything. And one of my favorite things that she does is when the coach yells for Abraham to do something in the ring, she yells what the coach yells. She kind of co-signs it and yells it herself, and she's just living it up. He wins the round, she's cheering everything. And, dancing between rounds. And she kind of joked and she said, we've got 6 kids. This is a vacation for us. These fights are an escape for us. And I was like, man, that's just hilarious. It's so wonderful to watch. And again, she laughed and she, apologized. She goes, I know I'm irritating. I know it was just funny. But everybody in the area is like, that's your husband. Go ahead, do your thing. So we just kind of understood. But it was really a lot of fun to watch that fight. Crowd was Abraham's a draw. Crowd was big, did a good job with that. Morales, I still think that he's a good kickboxer. I wish he could make 55 or consider it. I wonder how his skill set would match up there, but he still performed well, serviceable, as I said, in spots. But Richard Abraham, it was his night. The kickboxing came together, the offense came together, the aggression. I thought that when he had this fight, my first thought was if he fought Pinto this way, I think he would have beat him. I think that he went to Thailand, trained, got better, and then he decided to come and fight Pinto at Pinto style. If he had just been this guy, aggressive with his boxing, got the low kick offense going, I would be curious to see how that fight would turn out. Last fight in this card, of course, is Mirko Grunhardt finally winning the Glory Championship as he gets a split decision victory over Cedric Dumbe, 48-47, 47-48, and 49-46 for Grunhardt. First of all, as far as the decision goes, I was good with it. I think I gave Grunhardt, I'm trying to remember, I want to say, was it 2-3-5? I'm trying to remember. But I definitely thought that Dumbe, it was interesting because it was late, it was at the end of the night, both guys had really long walkouts. Grunhardt came out to We Are the Champions, very popular from the Nerds movies in the 80s, but like just Freddie Mercury and crew. Just this feel of, I need to hear, you know, We Are the Champions. I need to hear it over and over and over. So he had a really long walkout where he got into it. Then Cedric Dumbe came out, you know, dancing as he usually does, and he had a really long walkout. So crowd was starting to leave during the walkout because it was already like 12 o'clock, you know, that time. So they finally get in there and they compete, and I thought that Grunhardt was looking for his offense in spots as he normally does. And Cedric Dumbe, of course, was working the low kicks, but he didn't box as much. I thought Cedric Dumbe was a little off from his normal performances. For me, this is the way he looked in his Glory debut. The guy who fought Nicky Holtzkin, the guy who fought Kungulo, a lot more life in that guy. A lot, you know, better attitude. Who knows? Time change, travel, all that stuff comes into play sometimes. But, man, I was a little, thought he was just a little different than what I'm used to seeing him. Had moments. Fight got ugly. They got in a clinch a lot. There's a couple moments where guys are spinning and throwing on the ground, and like they'd want to hit each other so bad that they would just kind of fall into the clinch. There's a moment where they got into exchange, and Cedric Dumbe was kind of thrown turned away, and he sticked his hands up, and then Grunhardt tried to punch him, like, you know, from behind, the same way that he did with Gregorian. And then the punch didn't take Dumbe down. As soon as Dumbe squared up with him, he threw like a wild punch. They got to exchange and they like fell on the ground again. That happened over and over and over. There was definitely not the most aesthetically pleasing fight for sure. But the narratives of the story is, you know, clearly Cedric Dumbe is one of the best fighters in the world. He'll be back. This is his first loss in a very long time. Very, very skilled guy. But Mirko Grunhardt, this is a story of staying with it. He lost to Nicky Holtzkin several times. He lost to Cedric Dumbe last year. He's a guy who just keeps pushing, keeps pushing. The championship opportunity will come. Remember, he just fought for the championship. He just won in August. He fought for in October last year. You know, so it's like, it's not like it was a million years ago that he had that opportunity. He just stayed with it, stayed in the gym, stayed getting better. He can add this glory belt to the K-1 World Grand Prix. I mean, it wasn't the main K-1 World Grand Prix, but the belt that he won in Greece. He did a great job. He did a great job. I really think that he is a guy who kept staying with it. Doesn't necessarily have the most aesthetically pleasing style as far as winning rounds goes, but as far as having explosive moments, crazy KOs, jumping knees, you know, high kicks, you know, flying, whatever. He really does find offense here and there to get you in trouble. Takes breaks, throws explosive hands. And he got some wins over some guys that I thought would be tougher for him. And every time he lost the title, he worked his way back up to the top. Really, really got to give credit to, Mirko Grunhardt, best in the world, finally. Because, I mean, man, that's the game. He just stayed with it. And sometimes people get out there, and I, you guys listen to my podcast, I really hype it a lot. If you can get yourself through adversity, you have done so much for yourself in this sport. It's hard. It's hard to get up and do it when you don't want to. It's hard to get up when things don't go your way, when you lose, when, you know, you thought a decision could have gone your way. If you just stay with it, believe in your skill set, great things will come. And I really do believe that in this situation, the guy who won the fight, even if you disagree with the decision, you gotta love him for keep fighting and getting himself in this situation. We're gonna go over to China now as Kunlun did their thing. Kunlun 65. Gonna go ahead and talk about some of the winners. Won't talk about the whole card. I always say that, and then I end up talking about a good percentage of the card. But I'm gonna go ahead and jump into what I got. Superbon Bechamek gets a victory over Nayanesh Ayman. Excuse me. And Superbon just too skilled, just too much. I thought that Ayman really did have some very competitive moments. He's a big guy. I thought he was able to score the boxing here and there. I thought that the fight was close because he had scored some offense against the clinch. I actually thought it was a down performance for Superbon. I just think that his skill was a little bit too much, and that's why he was able to keep the edge on the card. He's a talented guy. Superbon is a talented guy for sure. But man, man, can he, at this level, I still favor him to win the tournament, but I feel that he's a guy who can offer more. I just think that the right opponent, right time, Iron Man really brought the fight to him, really had some good moments. And, you know, he loses, but he doesn't, you know, he kind of shows you as, all right, this guy could be something down the road. I was a big fan of his effort. But Superbon, just too much. Too much with the consistent offense. A little bit of diversity. Boxing here, single kicks here. I just thought that he'd look better in other performances. But in the end, this game's about winning. And Superbon gets the victory and moves forward. Murat Gregorian defeats Jomthong Shoatana. Jomthong, of course, been in the game for a while. Murat Gregorian, bringing that pressure, was able to find the big offense. Got him in trouble on the ropes and got him out of there. Murat Gregorian, it's tough. I mean, he's a tough fighter, you know. And if I remember correctly, I believe it was a 1-2 clean. Right-hand landed clean that put Jomthong off. I'm trying to recall the card in my mind. I definitely thought that Gregorian, whose training partner had success in the other card. Sorry, I almost made that mistake again. Murat and Murat Gregorian are not brothers. He came in determined to have success in this. He's, you know, fallen short in a couple of his glory opportunities. I expect him back at the top in glory, but I love that he's fighting here because this is how you make money as a prize fighter. I say this all the time. People don't believe me just because they remember kickboxing forums. The illusion of kickboxing forums and K1 in its heyday has made people feel like kickboxing isn't what it's supposed to be or used to be bigger in a certain period of time. It's not gone. It's different, and there is a big difference. Right now, there are more opportunities for kickboxers to make money in this sport across the world. Right now, there's more. And China is one of the main reasons for that. The reemergence of Japan is a good reason for that. These things are important. Like, people should understand it. They are very, very, very important. And this card, Murat Gregorian, even though he wasn't able to claim the glory crown in his last outing, he's been winning and he's been fighting as a prize fighter in both organizations, and that's how you can live off this game. If he's able to fight 3 times for one organization and 4 times the other, that's 7 fights in a year. You can live off of that. You know, you can kickboxing, you can live off of that. So shout out to Murat Gregorian getting the big stoppage. And the most controversial fight on the card, David Kiria gets a victory, stoppage victory over Marone Tuatua. For me, Tuatua had the victory. That's just for me. I thought that he scored more consistent offense, in particular in the first and third. I thought David Kiria was a little bit too tentative, found offense here and there where he let his hands go, threw some wide hooks close to distance. I thought that he had some offensive success in moments for sure, but I thought the consistent work was clearly from the taller Tuatua. He's just a good-sized guy for the weight class, good step knees, played the distance game really well. Didn't take too many of the hook wider. David Kiria's got this kind of sharpness with his wide shots. He fits them around the glove, right between your guard. He does interesting things there, and I didn't think that Tuatua took too many of those. I thought that for the most part, he was able to get his offense going. Kicks, combos, kick combos to hands, hand combos to knees, knee combos to hands. Like, he blended it up really, really well. I thought that he would get his hands raised, but they decided to go with Kiria. I do disagree with that decision, but I do think that Kiria, moving forward, he's got a name. Once upon a time, he was Glory Kickboxing Champion. And now he's a mainstay in China. So shout out to Kiria. And hopefully Tuatua, that they bring you back, because you are a legit talent. You're a very, very good fighter. And you probably should have got your hand raised in this one. Zionist Zuev gets a KO victory over Feng Xingli. Zuev is a guy they've used several times. He's won a lot of their, you know, their tournaments. He's won some fights for them previously. Talented guy. Curious to see what comes from him next. Muhammad Mazari. This kid is one of the ones to look out for. He is one of the futures. Artem Pashporn is not a bad fighter. I've talked about on this podcast for this promotion before. He's got some wins. He's done well in some of their tournaments. Muhammad Mazari, another level. Came out there, clean boxing. He started with some good hand work. Landed a really clean body kick. Built on it, scored it down. Artem Pashporn got himself back to the feet. Again, complete work. Boxing upstairs, little kicks, body kicks, head kicks, throwing up, you know, playing the game, making the defense go all over the place, and then another big shot to the body drops, push pouring again, and then a flurry finished it. The body kicks that landed, they were so well timed that they were not body kicks on the arm. They were body kicks on the body. He landed them very well. He found them, you know, either while Artem was throwing a punch or while Artem was taking a break in defense, and he slid them both under the elbow and got to the body. Big time shots, not to mention the boxing work, excuse me, not to forget, as I said before, the boxing work, the combined work, the blending it up that hid the body shots because so much offense was coming was the biggest part of this. So awesome job there. This kid is the truth. He's got a lot of skill. You will see more of him down the road. Really, really believe in that. Mazari is legit. We got Johan Droy gets a victory over Zhang Zihang by decision. Sergil Kulaba gets a victory over Andre Kulubin. Kulubin's an older guy, has been doing it for a while, still fighting international, still being consistent. Just didn't have the tools. Didn't have the tools to get the victory here. It's and again, Sergei, this is how it happens. The future guys are always going to be tough, and it's not always going to go your way. So shout out to Sergei for the victory. I don't want to talk about that one. Let me see. Sigdam got a victory over Ali Kaha. Amaki Guihu gets a victory over David Ruiz. Pechtanang Bechamek gets a victory over Yuya Yamada. Zhang Zhua gets a victory over Kenta Yamada. David Mejia gets a victory over Muhammad Galoy. And the, let me see. I think that's it for the majority of those tournaments. One of the main ones that I wanted to talk about before I left this card, again, we had other victories. Will Romero was a winner. Zhu Batong was a winner. Chu Hong was a winner. But wanted to finish the show talking about Elias Blade, who came in and put what could only be described as a Hulk smash performance over Jordan Cranio. Really came after him, aggressive with the hands, found success early, and you know how he plays with the knees back to the boxing. One of the most beautiful kickboxers to watch when he puts it all together. Absolutely dominant one-sided victory. He really does a great job of things. Excited to see him perform and excited to see more good things from him. Shout out to China that really, you know, this one took place in Qingdao, China. They've been consistent. They've been putting these cards on. They've been putting on good shows. That's what pushes the sport forward. We need more of that. Next thing on the card, I'm going to talk about a couple of single fights that went down. Imam Barlow gets a victory over Renee Klinratry in, well, I believe that was Poland, if I'm remembering correctly. And again, Imam Barlow, one of the best in the world. This is one of those weird fights where I'm like, do you want to consider stopping it? And the reason why I say that is, it was so dominant and so one-sided towards the end. Like, really, really one-sided. Clearly, you could look in the body language and the facial expression of Renee, and you could see she didn't want to be in there anymore. Corner just kept sending it in there, and she wasn't even offering back a lot of offense. She was just getting beat up. And usually, they don't always, clearly, they don't respond to me complaining about it. But I really thought that they didn't give her the best opportunity to, once it was clear that she wasn't going to win, they didn't look out for her in terms of, all right, clearly this girl's got her number today. Amon's better. Let's go ahead and call it a day and try it again another day. I believe that they left her out there with the hopes that she'd go the distance, more so than the hopes of this is the information you need to turn the fight around. It's just different. It's just way different as far as every coach's mentality on that. On that, I can't stress enough that Amon's one of the elite. I want to see her fight in glory. Single fights are fine. As I mentioned before, she's got to deal with infusion, so it's a lot tougher. I definitely want to see her fight the high-level athletes in the world. Infusion had a card go down this week. I won't talk about all of it. Oh, excuse me. Nope, it wasn't this weekend. I'm sorry, I got my notes mixed up. That's a card that's going to happen down the road, September 16th. Sorry about that. Got my notes messed up. Do want to talk about Anissa Hadeau was able to get a victory recently. And again, another one of the best female fighters in the world. Coming off the victory over Wang Yihan, she's continuing to have success. She would like an opportunity in glory. Not going to stress it. Just going to keep, you know, fighting until the opportunity comes. But definitely good stuff by her. She's a very, very talented fighter. And, I mean, in the end, that's what this game is. This game is about being the best. You know, everything in you should push you towards having big-time success. And I truly believe that when I look at her, what she brings to the table, who she is, she's got every tool. You know, we just got to see her against another big platform. The one platform is the thing that moved her higher into my top 10, and that was beating Wang Qian, who's still a legit fighter, but that was the first one. Now, let's get her in glory. Let's get her, you know, to fight the likes of Anissa Mexen. Get her to fight the Tiffany Von Soos. Get her to fight Iman Barlow. Those are the fights that have to happen next. So I'm pretty, pretty excited about that. Liam Harrison got a win. Also should be noted, John Wayne Parr's daughter fought for a youth title on this card, Jazzy. Jasmine Parr. And the reason why I bring it up is because the game's always about the future of the sport and who's going to be the stars for tomorrow. And Jasmine Parr already out there, you know, competing. And this is, I believe, her first international opportunity. That's where the sport's going. You got to get them young. You got to start selling them young. They did a great video that showed their, I mean, they've been, you know, John Wayne Parr has had the social media game. And just his communication with the combat sports world has always been great his entire career. He has showed video of, I'm training in USA now. I'm training in. You know, here, I'm fighting here, this is me backstage, this is me talking to someone, this is Instagram, this is Twitter, this is the fight forums, this is K1, this is Kakatugi, this is K1 fans, he has always, in his entire career, done the best job of getting himself out there and getting those, you know, his athletes out there. Back when Street used to fight for him, he did a great job of getting Street out there, and now it's his daughter. He gave us, you know, footage every step of the way, pictures of them when they arrived, that kind of deal, whatever. And they had a little video that showed her before she went out. And that's what's going to happen. That's how this sport's going to get bigger. If you are listening to this and you're big into kickboxing and you want to know, man, how do I get the sport big? Get one of your friends to record your stuff on. I mean, it's easy to do. Super easy to do. Start recording their stuff on your phone, adding some music to it, and put it out there. Just a short video. Sell yourself. That's important. Have that stuff added to it. Maybe you're not good at it, but maybe you know someone that's good at it. And you say, hey, man, you can go to this fight for free if you just do this. That's what we need more of, and they did a great job of it. But anyways, Liam Harrison goes out and puts on – it's not just that he won, you know, because he's always been an awesome fighter, and he's very, very skilled. But, man, when he gets you in trouble, he knows how to get you out of there. He scored a left hook started the damage. And then after the left hook scored, he built on the boxing and got aggressive, scored another down shortly after that. And then they called a TKO victory. He's awesome. He's an awesome fighter. I mean, again, the left hook came right around the corner. I'm bringing it up even as I talk to you guys because I wanted to look at it again. It was pretty cool stuff. He's one of the best fighters in the world. The only thing I want to see from him is just the platform to get his skill out there a little bit more. I thought it was cool that Lion Fight brought him over, but they stopped bringing him over. You know what I'm saying? He's got to be a household name. We've got to get our stars out there more. He is legit. I need this guy fighting on a regular basis. Also, shout out to the promoter, Andy Housen and crew. It was a good venue to do the fight of it. It's the kind of thing when I saw it, I was like, you can consistently do shows here. You can consistently do kickboxing, Muay Thai shows in this area. So shout out to him. I'm going off of, I'm looking at his Facebook right now. This is his 106th fight, his 83rd victory, 41 KOs, 8 world championship. That is just amazing, 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 amazing stuff. It's been cool watching his rise, and now he's going at it again. We don't have to wait that much longer. 7 weeks before your cow goes down in October. So Liam Harrison fighting consistently, getting the sport out there. Got to see you fight. Got to see you get those big opportunities, and we got to get your name out there more because you are important to the fight sport, to the kickboxing Muay Thai world. Go ahead and wrap the show up with some news. Nicky Holtzkin's got a new opponent. His opponent is Alim Nabiyev. So, of course, a lot of you guys are probably laughing the moment you hear this or the moment you saw this news, because there have been few people to push Alim Nabiyev like I have. It's not just that he's good, you know. It's a lot of guys are good. He is a star. He has all the abilities. He's got the showmanship. He knows how to move. He's got the style, you know, the Eastern European style that's really, really hot right now. He can play switch stance, combination low kick. They play behind the parry a lot. They play behind the paw a lot. They hide offense, sneaky knees. He's got the length. He's an exceptional talent, but it's the rest of it. It's the sell yourself part. That is the main thing that I love him being in this organization. Plus, if they're going to go into Russia and stuff like that, you got to have him. He's a guy you got to have on the card. So I was really, really excited by that news, of course. So for anybody that knows anything about me, that made my day, because this dude is truly, truly a talent. And I want to see more of him. I'll wrap the show up by talking about the announcement of the K1 Heavyweight Grand Prix. And this is very, very important. Okay, listen to me. Hear me out. They have stuck with their business model despite the level of talent that's coming into play, okay? So, for example, Makoto O'Hara against Bakam Asi, those guys are people that are more familiar with the 95kg weight classes. They've got their resumes there. Royal Menart against Moshihiro Iwashita. Koichi Pettis takes on Ibrahim El Bounoui. Bounoui is going to be the favorite for this. He's won for their promotion before. He stopped O'Hara, if I remember correctly. KG against Antonio Plazabat. You're looking at these names and you're like, those are not big heavyweight kickboxing names. Like, even for guys that aren't in glory, you know, you could have had, you know, Gisimek or something like that. You could have had Andre Grzmichuk as the gentleman who beat Rico Verheeven not too long ago. You were expecting something bigger than the names you got. And I understand for people who are like, man, I was expecting something else. I was expecting something more. They are staying within their business model. Four Japanese fighters, one in each bracket, giving them the opportunity to have one of them or two of them in the semis. It's a TV show that exists out there in Japan. They're staying in their business model. The better heavyweights can come down the road. It'll come in its time. But right now, this first card has got to have a huge Japanese participation. And they did their tournament the way they do all the other tournaments. The best fighter will win no matter what. You know, Wiru, who is the champion right now for the, you know, one of the lower weight classes, he's from China. He won that tournament despite the fact that all the fighters were pretty much Japanese in the first four, just like this one. There's a Japanese fighter in every bracket. The most talented guy will win no matter what. The question here is, what do you do with the rest of the card? They got to have Takeru in a super fight. They got to have Masaki Nori in a super fight. They got to have their usual suspects come and help this card along, because this, it's not the deepest. Wouldn't even be like, I wouldn't even put these kind of heavyweights, maybe one or two of them, I would put within the top 40 to 50 range. Like between 40 and 50, I could see some of them. But most of these guys are not elite level guys. But K1 starting it, they're going to have to put together a really good undercard to build their fighter. But really, this card fits their business model. That is why it is the way it is. So if you're wondering why this card looks this way, if you're disappointed in it, understand that K1 turned themselves around by focusing on building new young stars, their Japanese fan base, and building the athletes that they have locally into draws. And I think that that's what's happening. That's what's happened with Takeru and Saki Nori winning the championship. I mean, Koo is still an awesome fighter, despite the fact that Masaaki Nori beat him. So it's like, it's not like they brought in a bunch of guys for the Japanese fighters to have success against. Wasn't the case at all. They brought in some of the better fighters in the world, but they had to make sure that four of the fighters on the card was the better representatives that they had from Japan. The champions will always find their way to the top. And in this case, you're going to have to do some waiting because they've got to do some developing before that will happen. Thank you, everyone who's been listening to my podcast. I love doing it. I'm glad to be back. I'll have some news next week on something big that's happening for me in the kickboxing sport. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for following the show. God bless. I wish you all the best. And I hope all of you will continue to support kickboxing to the highest level. If there's a show in your town, it's Muay Thai, it's kickboxing, do your best to watch those shows. And if you have a fight, you're a kickboxer, whatever level, do your best to record it. Make it something that people can follow. Make it something accessible. God bless everybody. Thank you so much for your time. And again, support our kickboxers and Muay Thai fighters. Peace.